Chapter 5. The Sargasso Citadel.
You have come this far, only to be mulch for grandfather's garden, Silver Skin,
the Blight King burbled as he stomped forwards. Jellied rolls of fat quivered on bowed limbs, and air wheezed from between its folds. Crumbling armor squealed in protest as the Blight King raised his pitted axe and gave a joyful bellow. Lord Castellant Grimm ignored his opponent's taunts and swung his halberd out in a narrow arc. The Blight King fell in two directions, bile pumping. Grimm shook the foulness from his blade and surveyed his surroundings. The advance had almost ground to a halt. The air smelled of burning flesh and lightning. Balefire arrows shrieked out from murder holes, and greenish fire roared up, only to be snuffed by the cool wind and clean rain that filled the passageway. Lord Relictor Morbus's healing storm soothed the hurts of the stormcasts and kept the fell magics of the enemy at bay. Ahead of Grimm, Order armsmen held the line against the hallowed knights amid the smoking ruins of the Citadel gatehouse. The front of the gatehouse had once been the jaws of some ancient leviathan, now twisted out of shape and stretched into a monstrous parody of a portcullis. A jungle of rotting flesh and sargassum stretched beyond, and more rotbringers lumbered to join the battle line. It was as if every able-bodied warrior were being funneled into the gatehouse to stall their entrance. Talon chirruped, and Grimm scratched the Griffhound's angular skull. The animal paced beside him as he advanced behind the front ranks of liberators.
Yes, I know. Too slow. We need room to maneuver, but they're determined not to give it to us.
The mortals were disciplined, great iron-rimmed shields locked in a wall, spears lowered, blocking all ingress. When one fell, another stepped into his place. They were exhorted on by the blubbery champions who lurked in the rear ranks, only to squirm forth at the least opportune moment. The Blight Kings fought only long enough to buy their mortal followers breathing room, and then retreated back behind their shields, unless someone killed them first. Grimm glanced at the body of the one he'd just killed, and then back at the enemy shield wall. He could not help but admire such discipline, even as he sought to destroy those who displayed it. They knew what they were doing, these fly worshippers. The gatehouse wasn't wide enough to accommodate more than a few dozen stormcasts moving forwards at a time. They were still advancing, but slowly, more slowly than he liked. At times, hidden passages sluiced open in the boggy walls of the gatehouse, releasing fly-ridden fanatics and beastmen to hurl themselves into the fray. Outside the gatehouse, those stormcasts arrayed on the viaduct fought to smash handholds and steps in the glutinous surface of the walls. If they couldn't get through, they would have to go over. Grimm heard Korunta's warhorn sound and felt the rumble of collapsing masonry. He'd left the Night Heralder in charge of the forces still outside. If anyone could punch a hole in those walls, it was Korunta.
"Best be there to greet him when he does," he said.
He reached down and flipped open his warding lantern, letting the holy light swell and fill the passageway. He took the lantern from his belt and hung it from the blade of his halberd. He lifted the weapon high, like a standard. Mortal rotbringers screamed and clawed at their eyes as the light struck them, and Blight Kings stumbled back, altered flesh bubbling. Liberators seized the moment, tramping forwards to close the gap. Sigmarite shields crashed into the wavering line, and men fell screaming to be trampled underfoot. There could be no stopping, no mercy. Distasteful as it was, if the only way to their objective was over the crushed bodies of these corrupt mortals, then so be it. Grimm followed the front rank of liberators, keeping his halberd high. Behind him, Pharos and his retributors fell in, moving to protect him should any enemy get close. Talon was more than enough protection, but he saw no need to insult Pharos or the others. It was a sign of respect, if nothing else. Given that it was Pharos of the Heavy Hand, it was something of a surprise as well. The Retributor Prime had never been what one could call especially respectful. The hero of the Celestine Glacier had always been the wrath of the heavens made flesh, with a personality to match. At times, Grimm had suspected that Pharos cared about the opinions of only one man. Irksome, but understandable. Gardas was Lord Celestant, and his was the hand that wielded the steel souls in battle. But Pharos, like Tegris and various others, was not the same bellicose warrior who had once stalked the Celestine ice, lightning hammer in hand. He had been reforged, crafted anew after his death in the Gaia-tracked fen. The warrior who had come back was as fierce as ever, yet more biddable, less prone to the battle lust that had once afflicted him. Grimm was not entirely certain that he liked the implications. For if Pharos could become more obedient, and if Tegris could lose his wit, then so too could Gardas change. Would he even recognize the Lord Celestant when he stood before him once more? Or would he face a stranger, stripped of all familiarity? He had heard stories of the transformations of Thostos Bladestorm and Gaius Greel, of mighty warriors reduced somehow, lessened. He smelled the tang of scorched metal and felt a chill.
"We could use a bit of divine intervention," he said. "A bit more, you mean," Morbus said.
He leaned against his reliquary staff, visibly weary. He'd taken part in the initial assault, and his mortise armor had been marked and scored by enemy blades.
"It is all I can do to keep the balefires from spreading."
Grimm glanced at him.
"Are you injured?" he asked gruffly. "If so, you are only a burden here, one I do not need."
The words came out more harshly than he'd intended, but Morbus only chuckled.
"Simply weary," Morbus straightened. "Can you feel it?"
"Feel what?" Grimm asked, but he knew the answer. He'd been feeling it since they'd pushed through the outer gates. The air felt heavy, as if a storm were brewing somewhere.
"Reinforcements?"
Morbus nodded.
"Gardas is coming. We must make ready to greet him."
Grimm frowned, though his heart leapt. He'd hoped to have this battle done with by the time the Steel Soul arrived, but it seemed not to be.
"We need to break their lines for good. Give them no chance to recover."
He glanced around, and then slammed the ferrule of his halberd down.
"Hold!"
he roared, his voice carrying easily above the din. Liberators clattered to a halt, hunkered behind their shields.
"High wall formation!"
The front rank of liberators knelt, planting the rims of their shields on the ground. The second rank moved in behind them, slamming the bottoms of their shields atop those in the front rank, until a wall of sigmarite filled the passageway. The third rank raised their shields over their heads, parallel to the ground, and formed a narrow column. Those at the back knelt, creating an improvised ramp to the top of the wall. The Lord Castellant nodded in satisfaction. He was proud of this particular formation. It had never failed to win him victory on the fields of the Gladiatorium. It made use of all available space in the most efficient manner possible, and his warriors could hold their position for hours if need be.
"Solas!"
he called out. Beyond the wall, he could hear the muffled cries of the Rotbringers as they regrouped. Not much time now. The Judicator Prime hurried to join him. Grimm pointed to the rampart.
"I need your lightning, Solas. We have tarried in these cramped confines too long."
"Not much room," Solas said, eyeing the ceiling of the passageway. He turned and signaled to his Judicators.
"Enough, though. Gaius, Parnas, bring your warriors up."
Judicators, carrying heavy skybolt bows and thunderbolt crossbows, moved quickly up through the ranks, and then began to climb the makeshift ramp of shields. When they'd reached the top, they sank to their knees and waited, balancing perfectly on the raised shields of their fellow stormcasts. Grimm struck the ground with his halberd again.
"Steel souls, make your judgment!"
With a snarl of thunder, the Judicators unleashed a devastating volley on the packed ranks of Rotbringers below. The raised shields of the Liberators acted akin to the embrasures of a battlement, protecting the archers from harm. Blasts of celestial energy were followed by bursts of chained lightning, and soon the air was thick with the stink of charred meat.
"Pharos! Marcius!"
Grimm said, as another volley thundered into the enemy.
"Ready yourselves! Whatever is left out there, I want it ground into mulch.
As you command, Lord Castellant,
Ferros said, raising his hammer in salute. The retributors arrayed themselves in two queues behind the shield wall, ready to stream out when the order was given. Grim waited, eyes closed, counting volleys. The second would alert the Rotbringers to the change in tactics. The third would knock them back on their heels. The fourth and fifth would set the rear ranks to flight. The sixth would sweep the immediate area of survivors. There would be eight volleys in all. No more, no less. There was a certain amount of peace to be found in contemplating the machinery of war. Individual warriors, retinues, all parts of the machine. Machine against machine, and the first to break, lost. Keep the machine moving and you win. For Grimm, war was all about calculation. It was a thing of minute variables, observed and processed by a mind trained in the mathematics of battle. For others, he knew, war was a more instinctive thing. Guarders, for instance. Defensive by nature, he simply endured until the enemy made a mistake, and then exploited that moment of weakness. The Steel Soul did not lack for courage or skill, but he had a distinct absence of aggression. More than once, that absence had caused Grimm worry and to question his Lord Celestant. Some small part of him, an unworthy part, wondered if perhaps Sigmar had not made a mistake in assigning them their separate roles. He shook his head, banishing the thought.
"He the sword, and I the shield," he muttered.
"What was that?"
Morbus asked.
"Nothing. That's eight volleys. Open the gates."
He slashed a hand down, signaling for a section of the shield wall to disengage and fall back. They left a wide gap in the line, through which Ferros and Marcius led their warriors. For long moments, the only sound was the tromp of the retributor's advance. Then came the crack of a lightning hammer. Another. A third. Grimm struck the ground with his halberd.
"Bulwark formation! Quickly now!"
The shield wall broke apart and reformed in moments with a rattle of warplate. The bulwark formation was simple, similar to the high wall. It was a shield wall two ranks high, with the uppermost rank angled so as to prevent arrows, javelins, or stones from crashing down immediately behind. Slowly but surely, the bulwark advanced, moving over the bodies of the dead. Judicators dispersed along the bulwark as it moved, loosing crackling arrows through gaps in the shield wall. Morbus grunted. Grimm turned in time to see a shudder run through the Lord Relictor.
"What is it?"
Grimm asked, catching hold of Morbus's arm as he stumbled.
"Something."
Morbus shook his head as if to clear it.
"I can feel something."
"So you said."
"Not that,"
Morbus snapped. Grimm blinked. It was a rare thing for the Lord Relictor to raise his voice, even in the most stressful of moments.
"There's something stirring now, below us, in the roots of this place."
He looked at Grimm.
"Something sick. It feels like a wound going septic, as if the waters, the very air, are crying out in sudden pain, Loras."
Grimm hesitated at the Lord Relictor's use of his given name. Whatever Morbus felt, it was bad. He pushed himself away from Grimm.
"I have felt something akin to this before, when we first arrived in the Jade Kingdoms, at the Gates of Dawn."
A sudden chill ran through the Lord Castellant. The Gates of Dawn had been the reason they'd come to the Realm of Life in the first place. The ancient Realm Gate had supposedly led from Gairan to Akshi, but in actuality it had been twisted out of joint and corrupted, as so many things in these lands had been. Instead of revealing a path to the red sands of Akshi, the Gates of Dawn had opened up into the sour heart of chaos itself. The gate had vomited forth demons devoted to Nurgle. The horrors that followed had set the tone for all that was to come. The Gates of Dawn had been destroyed, thanks to Gardas, but a noisome taint yet lingered over those crippled stones. Nothing could feel the touch of the ruinous powers and not be changed in some way. Could there be a realm gate here? He asked, one eye on the advancing liberators.
I would stake my soul on it, Morbus said.
Then it's best we finish this now.
Grim paused, taking stock of the Lord Relictor. Morbus appeared on the verge of exhaustion. Decision made, he continued.
When we clear the gatehouse, I will seek it out. You maintain our lines and wait for Gardas. When he arrives, tell him what he needs to know.
Morbus shook his head.
But...
Grim gripped Morbus's shoulder briefly.
We all have our parts to play, Morbus. This is mine. After all, am I not a guardian of the gateway and keeper of the keys? The spirits and their ways are your responsibility. Realm gates are mine.
You cannot go alone, Morbus insisted. You will need me.
The Steel Souls need you, Grim said. Gardas will need you, and I need only myself.
Talon screeched, and Grim laughed.
Well, myself and one other.
When the first of the Storm Warriors advanced out of the Barbican, they did so in a deluge of rain and serpentine lightning. They were heavily armored, their ornate panoply shining silver and gold. They wielded their great two-handed hammers as if they weighed no more than feathers, and set to work with grim purpose. Duke Gatrog watched them from an overhanging platform, studying them with interest. It was rare that he could watch his foe in action from a safe remove, and he did not intend to waste the opportunity. A foe studied was a foe defeated, as Blightmaster Walgus supposedly said, upon the commencement of the second Pox Crusade into the northern wilds of Shaiish. That Walgus had perished soon after did not take away from the sentiment. If ever there was an enemy that required study, it was these Storm Warriors. The destruction of the outer viaducts had been unexpected. The Storm Warriors had reacted more swiftly than expected. Runners from the other two citadels reported confusion and devastation. Freed slaves running amok, walls torn down. Count Pustulix was dead, slain in a most dishonorable fashion. And poor Baron Feculast had been buried beneath his own walls by the relentless hammer strikes of the enemy's winged harbingers. Gatrog shivered. That was no sort of end for a knight. Things weren't going well at all. Gatrog couldn't help but wonder if the King of All Flies had removed his guiding hand from their shoulders. A defeat here would cripple the Order of the Fly for centuries to come. They might even be forced to abandon their holdings outside the Blighted Duchies. And all because of these silver-skinned invaders. He growled low in his throat, incensed at the mere thought of it.
They fight like Gaelians,
Agak said. The Shieldbearer crouched nearby. Eyes wide. Gatrog's great shield was strapped to his back, and he was almost bent double beneath the weight.
How can any mortal man hope to stand against that?
He who holds grandfather in his heart shall live forevermore,
Gatrog said, piously. The first wave of armsmen to reach the Storm Warriors died, as did the second wave, and the third. By the fourth, they were leaving some alive, though only by accident, and mostly because the smarter armsmen were using the corpses for cover.
I guess grandfather must not be in their hearts, Agak mused.
Gatrog looked at him, and the Shieldbearer cringed. The Chaos Knight turned his attention back to the enemy. Each one was an island, a silver blaze shining in a night-dark sea. They defended the inner portcullis, preventing anyone from lowering it and sealing off the barbican. From within the depths of the gatehouse came the clangor of metal-shod boots and the rattle of weapons. The outer walls shook from the assault of those Storm Warriors still outside. Above him, the ramparts echoed with the creak of war engines as their crews tried to guide them into new positions. It was unlikely to do any good, but there was strength in despair, and that was all any warrior could ask for. Well, that and the high ground. Gatrog raised his hand.
Ready,
he said. Behind him, 50 of the best bowmen in the order raised their worm bows. The corroded tips of the arrows glistened with the sweetest of effluvia. A man struck by one would sicken and die in moments. He was curious to see whether the same could be said of the storm warriors. He dropped his hand.
Loose!
The arrows hissed overhead, arcing above the courtyard, before plummeting downwards with impressive accuracy. A single silver warrior staggered, slumped, fell. His body exploded into a writhing nest of lightning. It surged upwards, knocking several armsmen from their feet and setting their jerkins alight. They rolled in the muck, howling in pain. The other storm warriors fought on, despite the arrows bristling from their warplate. Gatrog hissed in frustration.
"Make ready!"
he snapped. If they could not close the barbican in time, the enemy would enter the citadel, endangering all that the Order of the Fly had worked so long and hard for. He could not allow that to happen. The King of All Flies had tasked them, and Gatrog would see it done, upon his honour as a true and faithful knight.
"Loose!"
His command was interrupted as a gleaming arrow pierced the skull of the archer closest to him. The bowman collapsed in a heap. Gatrog looked up. A winged shape circled high overhead. More arrows thudded down, faster than Gatrog thought possible. He scrambled for cover in the lee of the wall. The bowmen weren't so lucky, and soon the platform was clogged with bodies. Cursing, Gatrog plucked an arrow from his forearm. It hurt, but pain was a gift from Grandfather, reminding one of the sweet brevity of life. The arrow turned to motes of stinging light before his eyes. Such was the nature of their foe. Nothing but starlight and lightning. Where was the blood? The crunch of bone? Could these creatures even feel, or were they simply ghosts stirred from maggotless graves by a jealous godling? In a way, he almost pitied them. They would never know Grandfather's love, or the glory of service to the King of All Flies. But they would die in his name all the same. He sought out Agak, who hunkered nearby, hiding beneath his master's shield. He gestured brusquely.
"Agak! Shield!"
"Keep forgetting they can fly, don't you, my lord?"
Agak puffed as he carried the heavy iron-banded shield across the platform. The winged bowmen had found other targets. Shimmering arrows pierced the murk, sending armsmen and blight kings tumbling from the ramparts and platforms. Down below, the battle continued. The storm warriors held doggedly to their position, beating back every attempt to shift them.
"Silence, Agak! Save your breath for issuing my challenge to yon poltroon. I would have words with them."
"Which poltroon would that be, my lord? The one with the wings, or—"
Gatrog caught Agak by the throat and dragged him close.
"I don't care. Pick one."
"Yes, my lord,"
Agak gurgled, eyes bulging.
"Right away, my lord."
Gatrog tossed him aside and hefted his shield. It had been made from the faceted scale of one of the great water drakes of the southern reach, and reinforced with iron and bone. Ruinous sigils had been etched into every flat surface, however small. The shield had been a gift from the great Lady of Cankerwall herself, and had carried him safely through fire and war for a century. He drew his sword and slammed the flat against the surface of the shield.
"Send forth my challenge, Agak. I go to confront the foe."
Agak screamed. Gatrog turned to chastise him and saw the shadow. He raised his shield just in time, absorbing the brunt of the hammer's impact. Lightning snapped out, clawing at him around the edges of the shield. His bones trembled in their envelope of flesh, and he staggered back, shoulder aching. He swept the shield aside, dispersing the smoke of the strike. A gleaming form arrowed towards him, crackling wings extended to their limits. He raised his shield and set his feet, bracing himself against the imminent impact. The storm warrior banked at the last moment, sweeping past him. The crackling feathers of one wing brushed against him, tearing through his armor and searing the flesh beneath. Gatrog bellowed and spun. His sword thudded down, narrowly missing his attacker.
"My lord, beware!"
Agak shouted, moments before he leapt from the platform. Gatrog looked up and saw a deluge of blazing hammers spinning down towards him. An instant before they struck, he followed Agak's example. He hit the ground as the platform exploded into fiery splinters. Rivets popped and plates shifted as he rolled heavily to his feet. He was a knight, not an acrobat. Something inside him was broken, and he tasted blood. It would heal soon enough, if he survived the next few moments. The courtyard was in chaos. Things were going wrong very quickly. Someone had smashed open the slave cages, and the dim-witted savages fell upon armsmen and overseer alike with unbridled fury. It was as if the storm had driven them berserk, but storms eventually blew over, and when it was done, they would go back in their cages. Gatrog would see to it personally. For now, he needed to rally those he could and drive the enemy back. He hunted for Agak. He caught sight of the shield-bearer rising to his feet nearby. He felt what might have been relief at his servant's survival.
"Agak, come here, man," he called out, waving his sword. "Quickly, there is work to be done."
"Bloody work,"
Agak said.
"But not for you,"
Gatrog said, ignoring Agak's sigh of relief.
"Go below. Inform Blightmaster Bubonicus of the situation. Return to me, if you can."
"And if I cannot, my lord?"
Gatrog caught the back of Agak's head.
"Then I will assume you are dead, for that is the only reason you should not return."
He squeezed gently, eliciting a whimper. Then he shoved Agak back.
"Go, thou, my faithful servant. Do as I have bid."
Gatrog turned, already dismissing the little rotbringer from his thoughts. Agak would do as he had been commanded, or he would die in the attempt. Gatrog had his own duties to attend to. He bellowed at nearby armsmen, gesturing towards the storm warriors. Before he could join them, however, he heard the crack of shimmering wings. His opponent from earlier had decided to continue their duel. He ducked aside as a hammer swept down, wielded by a silver-clad arm. The blow would have crushed his skull. The winged storm warrior dropped lightly to the ground and spun, one wing slicing out. Gatrog lifted his shield, and for a moment lightning clawed at him. Then he was moving through it, sword extended. His blade carried no sigils or ruinous markings. It was merely a sword, forged in balefire and cooled in the sour waters of the Mirklands. But driven by his arm, it punched easily enough through the silver chestplate of his opponent. The storm warrior exploded in a blaze of celestial energy. Gatrog heard a whir of wings and pivoted, driving his shield into the face of a second winged warrior with a loud clang. The storm warrior dropped like a stone, glowing hammers fading into motes of light. He shook his head, trying to clear it. Gatrog saved him the effort and removed his head entirely. Another searing burst of lightning came and went. When it cleared, Gatrog saw silver shapes marching from the barbican to join their fellows, and more winged storm warriors glided overhead. Enemies everywhere he looked, and a stinking clear rain falling from hideously clear skies. He cursed. Overhead, thunder rumbled, lightning flashed. But this time, it did not rise to the heavens. Instead, it descended. Gatrog looked up as the coruscating bolt speared downwards towards the balefire cauldron. It dropped from impossible, invisible heights, growing louder as it drew closer, like a blade cutting through the substance of Gairun itself. The light and noise of its coming swelled outwards, filling the courtyard. Gatrog raised his shield and hunkered behind it, deaf and blind. For long moments, the world was reduced to nothing but light and sound. Then the ground bucked savagely as the immense cauldron exploded into a million fiery fragments. Gatrog fell, but managed to hold on to his shield. He rolled awkwardly away as talons of fire reached out for him. The air was drawn forcibly from his lungs as his tabard blackened and his armor warped around him. Burning slivers of cauldron struck him, piercing his warplate. The heat scooped him up and flung him back. His spine connected with the support beam of a platform. The wood splintered. He dropped to the ground. The beam creaked. Through pain-blurred eyes, Gatrog saw the platform totter and then collapse. as several tons of wood and sargassum crashed down atop him, all he could think to do was raise his shield.